So for all of the revolutionary ideas in the U.S. Constitution regarding separation of church and state and the idea that there would be no official state religion, there have always been more than a few just-in-case, apparently, invocations of God and prayer in U.S. civic life. The House and Senate saw a need to have an official chaplain around in 1789, and both Thomas Jefferson and James Madison strongly objected. But In God We Trust is on all of our money. Candidates talk about God all the time in modern politics.
Our founding fathers believed in the right for us to pray and have that freedom of expression in prayer. And that's what we offer here today in 2013 in the town of Greece.
Today, the Supreme Court will consider the issue of religion in U.S. civic life in the case of Town of Greece versus Galloway. That was John Auberger, Greece's board supervisor, speaking to PBS earlier this year. The issue before the court, is it unconstitutional for the town in upstate New York to open its meetings with prayer? A federal district court has ruled for the town to continue the practice. The Second Circuit ruled for the plaintiff, Susan Galloway, speaking here to NPR, about how the prayers make her feel.
Sometimes you don't feel very welcome. I don't feel like I'm welcome at my town government anymore. My father had to leave Germany because of Hitler. We have to stand up and make sure that our government and religion are separate because we are a diverse country.
What is the issue before the Supreme Court? We turn to Sarah Beringer Gordon, professor of law and history at the University of Pennsylvania. Professor, welcome.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Is the court really going to take up the Establishment Clause here, or is it a mix of Establishment Clause and an argument that somehow free speech is infringed if there's a ban on praying?
Well, it's a very complicated set of questions, and there's a big precedent from the Supreme Court from 30 years ago that tried to answer all of the questions about whether we should allow invocations at the outset of important meetings of legislatures or town councils like Greece's, but left open a number of questions. And there's been substantial developments since then. And the Supreme Court, we hope, will clarify the issues after this case.
Politically, a lot of conservatives have reframed the question of prayer bans or, you know, Christmas displays, et cetera, as not a church and state issue, but as a free speech issue, and that it is an expression of religious intolerance to control the public space. Does the Supreme Court show any evidence of buying that argument at all?
There is some evidence. I think there's, for example, just to give you a sense of how active that kind of argument is, several of the preachers who delivered invocations, who started the Greece town council meetings with prayer, have filed a brief arguing that their freedom of speech is at issue. Mm. So partly there's a desire to allow all kinds of expression, not just religious expression, but other forms as well. And screening out only religion would indeed be a problem.
Will the argument today be, and might the court decide to create a formula whereby you have to have an equal representation of all religions, including non-religion invocations, that sort of thing?
Well, that raises the question of the practice of the town of Greece, which you mentioned, for example, that the first federal Congress hired a chaplain. Greece, in fact, did not open its meetings with prayers until 1999. So we have not a sort of age-old practice here. We have a new one. And for the first 9 years until this lawsuit was filed, every prayer was delivered by a Christian and was often explicitly Christian. After the lawsuit was filed, the town council invited a Wiccan priestess and a Jewish layman to deliver the invocations, but very quickly reverted to an overwhelmingly Christian message, often delivered in explicitly Christian terms. So part of what we have here is a particular set of practices by the town that not only didn't include all religions, but only really included one for a substantial portion of the practice. Thus, you heard the Jewish plaintiff saying that her faith was explicitly excluded by the town council. Mm-hmm.
You know, for a bunch of Unitarians and revolutionaries who wrote the Constitution and started the American Revolution, I'm surprised at how many biblical and religious references remain in our civic life. Is this a leftover debate between the Puritans and the anarchists?
Oh, that's a great question. I do think that, for example, sometimes we toss around low-level religious words. We call ice cream sin, or we invoke one or another name for God when we're just talking. So it's impossible to get rid of religious allegory and language entirely. I also think, though, that that it would be an impoverished world if it was just secular voices, secular occurrences, and so on. That the strength of religious commitment and the great variety and creativity in this country of religious belief and expression is what we want to nurture, not silence.
And that will certainly be before the court today. And you'll probably hear some impassioned questions with arguments implied from some of the justices as well. Sarah Beringer-Gordon, professor of law and history at the University of Pennsylvania, thanks so much.
Thank you.